And welcome to Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, bitchy, and so much more. I'm Bailey Bennett.
I'm Grant Jacoby.
Welcome, everyone,
to our podcast.
I have a really quick discussion topic that Please. I just immediately need to bring up.
Please.
Because I was walking around the other day, and I was thinking about this, and I was like, let me share this on our podcast, because. Has there ever been a person in your life where you just like inexplicably for no reason have hated them always? And do you want to share who that is and say their name and air it to the world right now? I only say this because I thought of mine.
Okay. My answer to that question respectively is yes and no.
Okay.
So yes, I've had that feeling. No, I did not want to share who that.
I mean, you don't actually have to
actually,
say
I can't, I definitely have had that emotion, but I can't think of
okay.
specifically, but obviously you do.
Yeah. No, I have one that I thought of that's, like,
I mean, I hate Sarah Huckabee Sanders with right. every fiber of my
no,
being.
No, but it's like, it's not even like, it's like there isn't a reason why you hate right. them, you know? And it's like, this is the epitome of my pettiness, but I have the strongest memory from when I was in kindergarten. Oh. So I'm like 5 years old, and I'm like thrilled for my first day of school because my birthday is on September 2nd, and I've never been in school for my birthday for like mm-hmm. people to celebrate me.
Right.
And I was so excited because school started on like August 31st. I was like, I'm going to be the first birthday of the year and everyone is going to be so fucking excited. And then guess what happens? Yep. I'm going to say his name right now. Justin September 1st.
Oh, that douche.
He was in my kindergarten class. And I was like, I'm sorry. Did you think? And then they were like, they either like combined our birthday celebrations or it was just like his was better because like, people were like over it because it was the next day. And I was just like, how could you do this to me? Person that I've never met 20 years later, I'm still pissed and I hate him.
What is he up? Do you?
I have no idea.
It's like, should we find him?
Like, I don't think he's a listener. I feel pretty confident.
Should, like,
but if he is,
in?
I don't fucking care. Run in hell, Justin.
Oh my God.
Anyway, welcome to our podcast.
I wonder if that's, so my birthday, when did you have your spring break? Well, you went to private school. So did you have a March spring
break? Yeah, in high school, we had March, yeah.
Okay. So I went to public school and we had a week in February,
yeah.
February and a week in April.
I had that up through eighth grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my birthday is in April and always followed. Always fell over.
Always
fell over April break.
Yeah, that sucks.
But I wonder if that's maybe why, like, I actually don't really give a shit that much about my birthday, like, mm-hmm. in terms of celebrating, because, like, no one ever celebrated it.
Yeah, mine is usually Labor Day weekend, like, very frequently is. And I'm just like, whatever. Like, I get an extra day off, and, like, people are celebrating other things, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the time when I was five, I cared a lot.
I mean, well, I think that's, like, peak care time is when you're child and
peak
you're like,
care time,
like everything just needs to be about me.
Yeah, and we're not like that anymore, as you can tell.
No, not at all, because why would
really not narcissistic podcast
no narcissist
why would we talk about ourselves yeah. ever.
I have something to tell you. So
oh good,
I broke a cardinal rule of mine the other day.
Oh my God. Okay.
I believe I've mentioned this on this podcast, and if not, here it is, which is that I've always been told, and I've always followed this rule, that if you're driving, never flip off another person.
Oh my God. Like, yeah. Cause they might murder yep. you.
I did it.
Oh my God. And you're still here.
I'm still here. So I was in a really, really bad mood. Actually, oh my God, this story is so applicable, because you remember how you talked about how you were the only student in a fitness class?
Yes.
And I said that's happened to me, where I've only had one student when
yeah.
I've been the teacher. So the other week, I was scheduled to teach this kind of masterclass and no one showed up, which
I'm sorry.
It sucks. It happens. Yeah. No, but I mean, like, it is what it is. It's not that big of a deal. I got some free studio space, but it was a day, like, it was in the midst of, like, I just moved and, like, I was like, the last thing I want to do is go teach right now. But it was out in Queens.
Oh,
so I like,
fuck that.
Schlepped all the way out to Queens. And I want to say I had, oh, I know what it was. I was in Brooklyn at our new apartment. And then I had to go back up to my old apartment in Harlem to get my old router.
Mm.
Because Spectrum was just going to basically just like replace
yeah.
my router for our Wi-Fi. And they were coming the next day. So like I needed to like get it. So I had to like go up to Harlem and then to Queens. And then so no one shows up.
Oh my
and so
God.
I was like, okay, fuck this. So I'm driving back from Queens back to Brooklyn and just like stuck in traffic and just like pissy. It was also like 92 degrees out. It just was yeah. like every condition was just like miserable. And
this is Cosette right here.
Yeah. Me. You know me. Little castle on a cloud. and so let me just describe the intersection. So
I love when you describe intersections
because I always do it so well. Basically it was an all-way stop.
Uh-huh.
So like,
okay.
you're supposed to, so the rule is if you come to the, let me teach you about driving. When you come to the stop sign, if it's you and another car at the same time, the person to the right goes first.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes.
So this happened. And so there's a car to my left. We got there at the same time and they started to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to go and they were kind of like, it was kind of like one of those things. And I was like, okay, like whatever. And I just like waved for them. I'm like, you can go.
Yeah.
But then the car behind them
uh-uh.
started to go too.
No.
And so I was like, nope. And so I start going and they like honked at me. And I was just like fucking fed up.
Yeah.
And I just flipped them the bird. But it was like as close, like they were as close to me as
oh, wow.
you are right now.
Good. Who were like,
what? It was like these two like guys in their 30s.
Yeah, whatever.
And let me tell you. The wave of emotion I felt just like, because I don't think I've ever truly flipped someone off to be serious.
No, me either.
I've always, it's usually been like, oh, like fuck you. Like,
yeah.
just like to like a friend. And because that's the kind of friend that I am is I'll just right, flip
of
you
course,
off.
When you do that to a friend.
I flipped off my boyfriend like this morning because he like didn't kiss me goodbye. He and his friends went off to the beach. And I was like, bye. and so the first wave I felt was just like power.
Right.
Because like, mm-hmm. I felt like I had the power because I was like, fuck you. And to see their faces like of like shock. But then that wave like quickly disintegrated when I was like, you just broke your cardinal rule. Like you are about to get murdered.
No.
And for the next like 10 minutes as I was driving, I kept like looking in my rearview mirror.
Oh my
like,
God.
Are they going to follow me? Are they going to like turn around and like.
Oh my God.
And literally they're probably like, who's that fucking asshole?
Honestly,
I was right.
I'm proud of you.
I had the right. And I'm proud of myself too. It's not something I want to keep doing because I honestly do think it's like, A, it's unnecessary. And B, it's like, it's going to provoke because
yeah.
road rage is such a real thing.
It really is.
And like people behave, myself included, behave in ways that they wouldn't in normal situations because like,
mm-hmm.
because of road rage. So, but it just for that one brief moment, I just like felt like on top of the world. I was like, I'm like getting, well, I think honestly, because the number of times I've wanted to flip someone off, I've been mm-hmm. like, it felt like I was like finally vindicated.
Good
and
for you,
able
baby.
To just like express myself.
that is how again. We express ourselves here at RWF.
Actually, I realized as I just finished telling the story that I'm like, I was thinking like, oh, like my mom would be so horrified if she knew that. Guess who fucking texted me the other day being like, what episode should I start listening to?
Oh my God. No, I mean, she can.
I mean,
you have a cool mom.
I do. I have a very cool mom and I love her very much if she ends up hearing this episode. And I have a feeling she's going to listen to one or two and be like,
yeah, which one are you going to tell her to listen to?
I told her to listen to the Dyatlov Pass.
Oh, that I love that.
Because that's, I think just like, that
I
was
still
a really,
think about it.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. one that lingers with you. What if I'd been like, go listen to The Vampire of Sacramento.
Like, please never do.
I know my sister listens very, not religiously, but no. Oh. She actually listens because she'll like text me about it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I love having her support on that.
But yeah.
It was so funny because like, well, it was in the midst of a conversation, like a text conversation that my mom was like, what episode should we start with? And I was like, I'm not going to respond to this. The next day she was like, what episode? And I was like, eh. But then it was like going through like the Rolodex of every episode. And I was like, how many times have I like sworn?
We swear
all the time, but yeah. also like, have I any told any stories that are like bad? But I don't think so.
I mean, I don't know what your definition of bad is. So
I mean, maybe that time I almost
my
died
mother wouldn't be
Uber.
Pleased.
Well,
oh, right.
yeah.
True. Speaking of spooky shit, can
yeah.
you just share a quick Hey, that scared the shit out of me.
I would love nothing more.
True to my form, this is not something that happened to me.
No.
Never, never does. But when I was doing research for a previous episode, I came across this story that was like, it just really fucking creeps me out. But it's a really quick, so it couldn't really be its own episode, but I just wanted to share it with you quickly because
yeah, of course.
It's chilling. This is the case of Angela Marie Hammond. And I don't know why you would have heard of her, but she was 20 years old and 4 months pregnant. And she was engaged to a guy named Rob Schaefer. And they went to a barbecue on April 4th, 1991. And they're just like hanging out at this barbecue.
14 days before my birthday, before I was born.
Wow. This should be about you.
I mean, this episode is all about our narcissism. So
as is every episode. So they go to this barbecue and then they like kind of went their separate ways, but they planned to meet up later after Rob's mom got home from work because he was babysitting for his brother. So Angela was like hanging out with a friend, but around 11:15, she called Rob from a payphone 7 blocks from his house. And she's like talking to him and she was just being like, I'm feeling kind of tired. I think I'm just going to like go home for the night. And as she's talking on the phone, she sees a truck just like circling the block.
Why is she on a payphone?
It's the 90s.
I guess.
Like maybe she didn't have a cell phone. Maybe she didn't have a car phone.
But she was so close by. I don't know.
I mean, it just sucks that she was that close by.
I know, but that's what I mean.
Yeah. So she's talking to him on the phone and he hears everything.
I don't like where this is going.
Yeah. But. So she's talking to him and she's like, oh, like there's this guy, like I'm feeling like getting a little bit nervous. Like there's this guy just like circling around in a truck. And then he like stops by the payphone and gets out. And he is just like shining a flashlight around the area as if he's looking for something.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like on the phone with him being like, I don't know what this guy's doing. And he like comes over and she asks him like, do you need to use the phone? And he's like, no, it's fine. And then she keeps talking to her boyfriend. And then like a few seconds later, he just hears her scream on the other end. And so he immediately like gets into his car and like drives over to where she is, which
I already would have been driving over. Like,
I know. I don't know how, obviously I don't know like what she was saying or like how long they were talking beforehand. But so he like drives over and he like sees the truck speeding away and he like hears her screaming from the truck. And he's like, so he's like in a high speed chase with his truck and like mm-hmm. blows out his transmission, but he keeps driving. But after like a mile or two, his car gives out.
Oh no.
So then he just loses track of her and they never found her.
Are you serious?
Yeah. They never like nothing completely unsolved. I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. So I just needed to share it with everyone here so they could lose sleep at
night.
Thank
you.
Like I just don't think I could imagine something scarier than being on a quiet street, mm-hmm. knowing there's no one around you and just seeing this person coming towards you and being like, even if I were to run now, like there's nothing I could do. Like,
yeah.
And that's why, I mean, we've talked about this before, but like, that's why the suburbs are sometimes so much scarier than the city.
So much scarier.
Like there's so much crime that happens in a city, but you're rarely completely alone.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Oh man.
Yeah. So that's Angela. I'm really, it's very tragic and I hate it.
Poor gal.
So anyway, she's a pretty, I'm sure she was a badass bitch in her own right and didn't get to fucking live out her potential, but
she was pregnant.
I know. Do you have a badass bitch that you want to talk about this week before the story? I'm sorry. Is it going to be like a hard segue? Okay.
Well, I'm going to brighten things up because it's still Pride Month and yeah. So my badass bitches of the week, are the new Fab Five from the Queer
Eye. Oh my God. Yeah.
Which is, Bobby Cromo, Tan, Anthony, and Jonathan. Have you watched?
Yes. Ryan?
So the second season just came out a couple weeks ago. Right. And I actually hadn't seen the first season until earlier this month.
I haven't watched the whole season, but I've seen
it. It's so good. Episodes. And it's so,
so pure.
It's so pure. And for those of you that don't know, so Queer Eye for the Straight Guy was this show that aired in the early 2000s and was rebooted earlier this year by Netflix. And I mean, it's a pretty like straightforward concept where basically these five gay dudes, they kind of they get submissions for people that like kind of like want not even just like a full, like not even just like a makeover, like a full life makeover where.
Yeah. And that's like my favorite part of the show is that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So each of the five of them has like different like specialties so that they get like clothes, like the wardrobe makeover and like grooming makeover and their house gets a makeover.
And I mean, just like their social life, which is like a big deal for some of these people.
I mean, some of them are hilarious. I mean, like Karamo's thing is culture. So he'll be like,
yeah,
let me show you like, it's like,
here's how to like go play tennis with your friend.
Like, seriously. And then like in comes Anthony being like, I'm going to show you how to make avocado toast.
No, it's really funny. But it does seem like they really are kind of like changing lives.
They're totally changing lives. And they're based in Atlanta, Georgia, even though they live all over the country. And so like, at least in the first season, a lot of the people they work with are people from like smaller towns. And so a lot of it like also has to do with like them, like some of the people they work with, they're like, you're the first gay people I've ever met. And like, you've changed the way that I've thought about gay people. And it's just so sweet. And it's so, like you said, it's so pure. And I also just think that the five of them that they cast really shows a wide range of just different types of, it sounds weird, it's being like different types of gay people, but
no, it's true though. Yeah.
Especially in the gay community, we like to label people in terms of like body type and personality type and between like twinks and bears and blah, blah, blah. And so it's nice to see like that they're all just there and with like differing levels of flamboyance and whatnot. Like, I don't know. It feels like as a gay person watching it, I feel like the gay community is well represented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's showing that it's not, there's no such thing as like a stereotypical gay.
Yeah. It's like, you can be just, these people just like, they are who they are.
Yeah. And they really do, they do a lot to try to like change people's ideologies and absolutely. Change people's minds about that community and just like be more accepting in their lives. And it seems like it's really working.
Absolutely. And I just have to say that I very rarely lust after mm-hmm. a celebrity. I mean, like there are a few that I'm like, oh, like they're so hot, but Anthony is so hot. Like it hurts.
You know that he lives in Brooklyn.
Yes. He lives, I mean, Brooklyn.
He's like, literally like,
I know store. I think if I saw him, I would pass out. Like
have you seen his boyfriend?
No.
Oh my God.
I'm sure he's
hotter than Anthony. I'm not kidding. We'll take a little look at that later.
Yeah. So a lot of them are really, really attractive. Like it's also some nice, just like man candy.
Yeah.
Like Karamo's stunning. And I mean,
amazing. I'm going to also talk about a true queen which is Winona Ryder.
Oh, nice.
So I just watched Heathers for the first time.
What?
I know, it's truly shocking. Speaking of like last week when that guy died from drinking laundry detergent, like kind of how I felt during Heathers where I was like, how did she just like chug that entire thing and she just thought it was fine and immediately died? But Winona Ryder was like approximately 17 years old when she was in Heathers and is still slaying. She's slaying it. Like she's such a true talent and someone who has like, I'm so pleased to see her like kind of back on the top and back in the public eye, you know, being on Stranger Things, obviously, where she gives an impeccable performance. But I think she's a person who very early in her career, like saw a lot of success and was in a lot of big movies kind of one after another. And, you know, Beetlejuice and Heathers and Edward Scissorhands and like all of
Mermaids.
Those.
Mermaids with Cher.
Nope. All of those early roles. And then I think like she did have some like whatever controversies, you know, later in her life, whatever, like all this stupid shit about like shoplifting and stuff that was like so petty and I think did take a toll on her public image. And I'm just really glad to see that. I think she's being really respected again and just respected for her talent. And I love how fucking weird she is.
She's a weirdo.
She's so weird. Like watching that video of her from one of the acceptance speeches last year where it's like, it just looks like there are aliens flying around her head. There's no explanation. And it's fantastic. Like it's beautiful. I could watch it all fucking day long. I don't know. I just really, I love her. And I felt like she needed to be acknowledged on this podcast.
I'm happy to acknowledge her because I've long admired her through many, many a film. Little Women, Mr. Deeds.
Mm-hmm.
Is she in Reality Bites?
I think so. I've never seen Girl Interrupted.
Oh, girl. Duh.
But like apparently that's like her star performance.
But Heather's, I hold Heather's in a very, very special place in my heart, because there are a few things I love more than a campy, culty high school movie.
It's like really right up my alley.
If you like Mean Girls, you need to see like kind of the original source material. Yeah. Like Heather's is a true divine experience. I mean, like, it's not, I haven't seen it in a number of years. So yeah, actually,
the thing I'll say about it is like, I don't think it holds up amazingly well in this like cultural moment. Especially with like Christian Slater plays her boyfriend, right?
Yeah.
And he is very like possessive and abusive and controlling kind of from the beginning. And it feels weird how long it kind of takes her to realize that he's a murderer when he like very like almost immediately murders her friend, like once they kind of get together, and then like she kind of gets wrapped up into it, but it doesn't seem like she's really trying that hard not to be wrapped up into it. But I think it's kind of all forgiven because of like the final scene where she is truly a badass bitch. So
I mean, who wouldn't want to be a Veronica?
I know. Yeah.
Have you seen, I haven't really been following it. So Heather's was a couple years ago was adapted into a musical. Mm-hmm. And then recently they were going to reboot it as a TV series.
Oh yeah. I heard it's like,
yeah, they scrapped it entirely. Like the whole season was filmed.
I heard there was like a whole issue with it. And like, Shannon Purser, I think, was on it. Mm-hmm. And,
Shannon Doherty's in it. Selma Blair's in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what happened with that.
Well, what I read is that they postponed it because of the shooting in Florida.
Right.
And so my assumption is that there's something to do with a school shooting.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, it just keeps fucking happening. So
I know, but it makes me sad. Cause well, I mean, I was really excited to see it cause I love the movie and I love what they were doing with, the fact that the Heathers, instead of just being like white chicks, were like, one is like a little heavier and one is, I think, like a non-binary person. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. I was really, really excited about it, and it sucks that, I hope that some other network picks it up because it's entirely completed.
Yeah. And I think that could definitely still happen down the road.
Right. It makes me think a lot about the censorship that we have. No, we didn't talk about this. You and I were talking about like shows like 13 Reasons Why.
Right.
Where it's like, that's okay. Like that's
why is that fine?
I mean, I haven't seen the Heather's reboot. So also it could be like super problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one for censorship, I think is the gist. And I think
clearly on this podcast.
Well, I think that there are certain things that you can do. Like, this is sad. I can't remember what shooting it was. Actually, no, I think it was the Las Vegas shooting where there was a shooting scene in the most recent season of American Horror Story. And Ryan Murphy went back and basically cut it out almost entirely. It still was included because it was important for the plot, but like you don't see it.
Oh, wow. That was like how they postponed Earshot. Buffy because of Columbine, but they still aired the episode.
I don't know. I
know it's hard.
I might be pissing some people off by saying this, but I just think that you can't blame movies and TV for people.
Clearly, I think it's just an issue of them feeling insensitive, but at the same time, like these things happen, so it's not. Well, the story should be told.
Okay, let's use Earshot as an example. So Earshot, episode of Buffy. It was supposed to come out like weeks after Columbine happened. They postponed it until the following fall. Like, I understand, like, it's something where it's like, it's too soon, 100%.
Sure.
But I don't know. I don't even know if I'm convincing myself. How did we get here?
Well, I will just say another badass bitch that I've talked about in the past, Carrie Hope Fletcher, who is that YouTuber who is in the tour of the Addams Family musical and who is in Les Mis in the UK, is now starring in the Heather's musical.
Oh, nice.
On the West End. Cool. So
good for her.
You know, that's happening, and that's a nice thing that's happening.
She's
amazing. She's Veronica. So.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah. We'll table that for now.
Anyway, do you have a story to share with us this week?
I have a story. So just because I felt like, let's be a true bummer, I actually had texted Bailey and I was like, should we do like an entire pride themed episode where we can like talk, like all our baddest bitches can be queer and the like, complaints around, like, and we kind of this last week, obviously with my complaint about Pride and corporations kind of exploiting it. But I then was like, oh, like, and we can do like a queer or like gay based story. But then like, and I knew I wanted to do this because we talked about the film, my friend Dahmer.
Yeah.
And you, once we talked about it, you mentioned that you didn't really know much about Jeffrey Dahmer. So I felt like I wanted to kind of educate you.
I mean,
and he was gay. Yeah. And he did some gay things, but
here we fucking go. I was like, when Grant told me he had prepared this for today, I was like, wow. Okay.
But yeah,
about Jeffrey Dahmer.
As I started doing research, I was like, let's not associate this with this asshole with pride.
Yeah, seriously.
So that's not what's happening. Okay. But yes, we are about to, let's go down into the dark, dark, dark rabbit hole of serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah.
Another reason I chose him is because I feel like he's considered one of the most like famous serial killers of all time, but I think he's one, at least I find that I feel like the kind of like trifecta is Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, and John Wayne Gacy. Or I'm trying to think, like Ed Gein, I think, is thrown in there a lot.
For sure.
But I don't know, for some reason, I feel like Jeffrey Dahmer isn't talked that much about.
Not as much, I don't think. We're really bringing awareness to an underrated topic.
Let's just get to it.
Okay.
Buckle in, folks. On May 21st, 1960, Jeffrey Dahmer was born in West Allis, Wisconsin. I think it's Allis. It's spelled A-L-L-I-S.
Whatever.
Allies. To his parents, Joyce and Lionel Dahmer. His brother David was born 7 years later, and his family eventually relocated to Bath, Ohio. Dahmer was extremely withdrawn and uncommunicative as he reached his adolescence, showing little interest in any hobbies or social interactions.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Although not same, his only real pastime was biking around his neighborhood looking for dead animals.
Oh, sure.
Which he would dissect in the woods near his home or even in his own house.
Oh, I also, my friend Dahmer is supposedly like about this period of his life he was a serial killer. So you can go watch that if you want.
I do want to see
that. I really want to see it. Okay.
It's never a great sign if your little passion project is.
But he wasn't like actually killing them yet. He just was finding already dead animals and then dissecting them.
Says in one instance he put a dog's head on a stake.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how many dead dogs you find running around. So it's
right.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Cool. Go on.
Trigger warning. he was considered an outcast at his high school, although he received some attention from students, or some like positive attention, which is strange. From students due to his impressions of his mother's interior decorator who suffered from cerebral palsy.
Oh, cute. Love it.
So.
Just the class clown.
Yeah, he was a real stand-up guy. Real fun to be around. He also began drinking excessively in his teens and was an alcoholic by the time of his high school graduation.
Perfect.
How does that happen?
I mean, I guess when your only friends are dead animals, you're pretty lonely.
Although I'm thinking about it, there obviously were a couple like teenage alcoholics in my high school.
People
would come to school drunk.
Great.
Yay. In 1977, his parents divorced and Dahmer went off to the Ohio State University, but he dropped out after only one term, having failed to attend most of his classes because instead of going to class, he would spend most of his time just getting drunk.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A lot of this story actually just is going to tie back to his alcoholism. Like a lot of it is just like, well, he was fucking loaded.
And I actually don't know that I can like, is that does, that's actually doesn't seem like it's like super common for serial killers. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Ted Bundy was a violent alcoholic.
Mm, okay.
He loved to, there's that one story of, which actually is going to kind of echo something here. I think the story of where he was, he tried to handcuff a woman and he ended up putting both handcuffs on the same wrist. Oh. So she was able to get away.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah. So I guess if you're going to be a serial killer, maybe lay off the sauce.
Don't be a serial killer though.
But then what do we have to talk about?
I mean,
I'm kidding. Kind of. All right. Dahmer committed his first murder in the summer of 1978 when he was only 18 years old.
Wow.
His father was away on business and his mother moved out, taking his brother with her. So he was obviously left behind alone. That June, Dahmer picked up a hitchhiker named Stephen Hicks and offered to drink beer with him back at his father's house, planning to eventually have sex with him. Yeah, by the way, Dahmer's gay.
I feel like you might talk about this, but is like, was he like repressing the fact that he was homosexual? Is that like part of the reason why he was doing this? Because he wasn't comfortable being with men otherwise?
No, I don't think so. So it's not, that's, I feel like, is kind of what was the case with John Wayne Gacy, mm-hmm. from my memory recollection, where he was, right. like, he was living a double life, like married to a woman. And like,
right.
I think that he was, I don't know. Maybe we'll do him a different episode, but for everything I read was that he was kind of like chill about it.
Okay. So do you know if he ever had a relationship with a man just in his
like life? A boyfriend?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I think he was too busy murdering them.
Sure. Okay. Sorry, I keep interrupting you.
No, please. So he had picked up this hitchhiker, took him back to his house, and eventually, I don't know if like Jeffrey Dahmer like was like creeping him out, or he just was like, I've had enough. And so he tried to leave, in which case Dahmer bludgeoned him with a 10-pound dumbbell and strangled him to death.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He later said he committed the crime because the guy wanted to leave and he didn't want him to. Like a really good reason.
Right. That's what you do.
Dahmer then dragged the body into the crawl space under the house, where it stayed for a few days. Eventually, the smell became quite strong, so Dahmer went down and cut the remains into pieces, placing them into small plastic bags, which he then put in the bushes behind his house and eventually buried them.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. He then began to worry that the neighborhood kids would dig up the remains, so he dug them up and smashed the bones into pieces and scattered throughout the woods.
What the fuck?
Oh, that's like, you think that's,
yeah,
okay. That's fucked up?
Great.
Yeah, Dahmer seemed to have a weird, like, fascination is a wrong term, but like something about the body disposal process seemed to be something that he enjoyed.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So after leaving OSU, which is the Ohio State University, mm-hmm. Dahmer's father then forced him to enlist in the army, where he did well at first, but was eventually discharged after 2 years in 1981 because of his alcoholism. So mm-hmm. like, bro can't get it together.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to shame alcoholics, by the way.
Yeah, no, I don't think they don't really go hand in hand with the murder thing.
Yeah, just by the way.
But it's not helping.
I'm not trying to make fun of that in the least bit. Upon his discharge, Dahmer was provided with a plane ticket to anywhere in the country.
What? Is that a thing?
I guess I think they were kind of like, you need to get the fuck out. Like, where would you like to go?
Okay, cool.
Dahmer later told police that he did not want to go home because he didn't want to face his father. So he headed to Miami Beach, Florida instead because he was tired of the cold.
I mean, I get it.
Although eventually he didn't stay down there very long, and eventually moved back to the Midwest. And in 1982, he moved in with his grandmother, where he lived for 6 years. During this time, his behavior grew increasingly strange. His grandmother once found a fully dressed male mannequin in his closet that had been stolen from a store.
Oh, cute.
I know. Like, that's not
this,
creepy.
His friend.
Be like, I'm going to put away Jeffrey's laundry. And then it's like, ah! on another occasion, she found I don't know what caliber this is. It says .357 Magnum.
Okay.
Under his
bed. We know a lot about guns.
Yeah. He was also arrested twice for indecent exposure. The first time in 1982 and the second time in 1986, where he was caught masturbating in front of two boys.
Oh, love it.
Like, don't do that. All right. On September 15th, 1987, Dahmer spent the day drinking at a gay club called Club 219, where he met 26-year-old Stephen Toomey. They chatted with each other for a few hours and eventually left together to go to a hotel to rent a room.
Just like...
because he couldn't bring it back to grandma's house.
Right. Under what circumstances? Like, how... was he charming? Like, he picked up a guy at a bar.
Yeah. No, Jeffrey Dahmer was like, he wasn't unattractive. He was like a...
No.
But I think he must have been...
so weird.
I guess. He must have had some sort of charm to him.
Okay.
There weren't a whole lot of testimonials about him in my research of him being like a stand-up guy.
Sure.
Or having any sort of friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting because this is the peak of the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
I don't really know where I was going with that, but like in terms of cruising, I feel like that wouldn't be like the smartest move.
Yeah. I mean,
but
anyway.
So they eventually left the bar together and got a hotel room. Dahmer claims that he can't really remember what happened once he got to the hotel because he was so drunk. He wasn't sure if they had any sort of sexual relations, but when he woke up, Stephen Toomey was dead. Dahmer said that he had beat him very badly and had strangled him, which was kind of his initial MO in these crimes. After realizing what he had done, he went out and bought a large suitcase, stuffed the body inside, and caught a taxi back to his grandmother's house. Once there, he cut up the body, placed the pieces into garbage bags, and put it out on the curb for the rest of the day's trash.
And no one found it?
I don't think so.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, it is very clear that Dahmer did not really regard his victims with high regard.
No.
Which, honestly, that actually might play into some sort of internalized homophobia.
Right. Right. He's not, they're not like trophies to him.
Well, they eventually become trophies.
Okay, cool. Go on.
No, but you're right. Like, it's not.
It's not even like a conquest necessarily. It almost seems like at the beginning he didn't even mean to do these things.
Yeah, it sounds to me like he had these violent tendencies and he had a tendency to get really fucking drunk.
Yep.
And I think that they kind of like collided and he probably enjoyed what he was doing. On January 16th, 1988, Dahmer approached 14-year-old...
No.
I know.
I don't like it.
Yep. 14-year-old sex worker named James Dockstader.
Baby.
And offered him money to make a video with him. Dockstader agreed, so Dahmer took him home to his... Actually, took him to his grandmother's house, to his basement room. He then gave James a sleeping drug concoction, and once he passed out, Dahmer strangled him. Mm. Yeah, if I haven't said this before, this story is not for the faint of heart. So that's your disclaimer, because he then stripped the body of all flesh by using acid and then smashed the bones with a sledgehammer.
Holy fuck. So at his grandma's house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unclear what she was doing, like
really?
Playing bridge.
Seriously. Okay.
Knitting. She's like, Jeffrey, what's that smell?
What's going on down there? Jeffrey, hearing aid.
Would your friend like some Kool-Aid? Blue?
This is my favorite thing you do.
Take me to the lighthouse. Was it John Joyce? Or
Grandma Joyce.
Grandma Joyce.
Like,
oh,
Grandma Joyce is Grandma my Joyce favorite is character. And
well in my stand-up routine.
Back to the horrible murder.
Yep. So, on March 24th, 1988, Jeffrey Dahmer met Richard Guerrero at a bar called The Phoenix. Guerrero was broke, so Dahmer once again offered him money to make a video, and he would eventually fall under the same exact fate as James Dockstader. I didn't go into the details of every single murder. I hope that's okay.
That's
because
really fine.
Honestly, they're pretty like similar. And I just really didn't feel like it. Dahmer's grandmother eventually asked him to move out because of his late nights, his strange behavior, and the foul smells from the basement. Like, good for you.
I mean, yeah, but like, you're just like, what do you think? It's dirty socks? You're not going to fucking investigate that situation? Okay.
She actually called his father to come inspect the room, where he found a black sticky residue, which was actually what happens, is left behind when acid comes into contact with human flesh.
Oh my God.
But when he questioned Dahmer about it, he told his father he'd just been experimenting with animals.
Oh, and his dad was like, cool.
He was like, all right. Awesome. I guess he said that it was like a squirrel he had found. And his dad was like, cool.
Oh.
But you still got to move out.
Okay.
And he eventually found an apartment on Milwaukee's west side, closer to his job at the Ambrosia Chocolate Factory.
Oh. My God. How many people do you think that he secretly was feeding flesh to people at that chocolate factory? That's my question.
Maybe.
I'm sorry. That was disgusting.
Just like.
This is yogurt all over again.
Yogurt gate. Just some like acid flesh in with the like Hershey's chocolate bars.
Yeah.
But just 24 hours after moving into his new apartment, Dahmer lured a 13-year-old boy named Kazan. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his last name. Syntha some phone.
You got it. Yep. It's okay.
It's spelled SINTHASOMPHONE.
Great.
Anyways, he lured this boy into coming up to his apartment. Once there, Dahmer drugged and molested him, but the boy escaped.
Yes.
Yeah, thank God. He's one of the few that actually made it out.
Oh, good.
He reported the incident to the police, and Dahmer was charged with sexual assault and enticing a child for immoral purposes. He spent 1 week in jail before getting released on bail.
What?
Just like after his initial arrest. Like, not like he wasn't.
Oh, no, I know, but still.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that attempted murder? No? Okay.
Well, he don't think he'd gotten to that part yet. Okay. He had just sexually assaulted him.
Okay.
Just.
Yeah, I mean,
great. Yeah. On January 30th, 1990, Dahmer was found guilty of the crimes, but sentencing wouldn't take place for another 4 months. So he had four more months to commit more murders.
Perfect.
On March 25th, 1990, Dahmer met a man named Anthony Spears at a gay bar called Le Cage. Dahmer took him back to his grandmother's house because he assumed the police were watching his new apartment. Once they were there, they had sex before Dahmer served him his usual spiked drink and murdered him. At Dahmer's sexual assault and enticing a child for immoral purposes sentencing. Also that phrasing, like enticing a child for immoral purposes.
No, it's like, that's not exactly it.
Yeah, I don't, that's a very like.
It's like a really nice way of saying
yeah,
like.
Child rape.
Gonna fuck, like being a pedophile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dahmer pleaded with a judge for leniency, saying, I am an alcoholic and a homosexual with sexual problems.
I mean, like, that's something that you should really, like, talk out with your therapist and, like, not murder people.
Yeah, maybe. Not through the act of murder.
Sure.
The judge decided to sentence him to 5 years probation.
What?
And 1 year I'm and sorry. A halfway house so he could continue to go to his job.
They just really needed him at the chocolate factory.
Yeah, the Ambrosia Chocolate Factory was like, listen.
He's our best truffle maker.
Like, Mr. Wonka got on the phone and was like, you don't understand.
He's the best in the business.
Yeah. Best Oompa Loompa I've ever had. Yeah, so 5 years probation and one year and a halfway house. Like, what the fuck does that do?
Okay, great.
But he got released from the halfway house 2 months early for good behavior.
Amazing. I'm so happy for him. Mm-hmm. He's reformed.
After he left the halfway house, he began renting the now infamous apartment at the Oxford Apartments on 924 North 25th Street in Milwaukee. And before you ask, yes, it's been torn down.
Damn it. I mean, like, after you tell me this, though, I might be like, that's fine. Like,
yeah, no, this isn't like, there are certain things that, like, places I'd love to go. Like, I'd love to see the Amityville house. I'd love to see the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Dahmer's like murder apartment. Like, yeah. I'll pass.
Yeah.
And so now that he was free, albeit still on probation, he went back to his murder spree.
Oh, did he?
Dahmer met Milwaukee newcomer Ray Smith at Club 219 and asked him back to his place to pose for some photos. Once there, Dahmer drugged, strangled, and raped his dead body.
Oh my God.
So now we're moving.
We're moving into necrophilia.
Yeah, that's why this one, I guess, is important.
Okay. Great.
He then dismembered the body, threw it out with the trash, but he decided to keep the skull and painted it to preserve it.
Oh my God. And when people came over, he was like, oh, no, I just got that at, like, Cinco de Mayo and went on a vacation. What the fuck?
Yeah. So that's, like, the first documented case of both necrophilia and keeping a trophy.
Okay.
It would not be the last of either.
Okay. I mean, you're going to get to this, but basically, so, like, he confessed to all of this later on.
Oh, yeah.
So we know all of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Great.
It's also worth noting, though, that a lot of his victims were gay. A lot of them were Black or Latino, and they were often either sex workers or people who were new to town or people who lived on the street. So I think also, like, unfortunately, with a lot of these cases, they weren't necessarily missed, or if they were missed, they weren't missed by people with enough power to have anyone do anything about it, which is why he was able to commit almost 20 murders in the span of like 3 years.
It's so tragic. And there are people in such vulnerable situations already, and people who are like putting themselves out there in this community, and for him to kind of take advantage of that and take advantage of young boys who were trying to make money. And it's so sad.
Yeah. On June 14th, 1990, Dahmer met and murdered a man named Eddie Smith in his usual manner. And less than a month later, on July 8th, 1990, he decided to vary his MO instead of deciding to no longer bother drugging his victim before attacking and killing them. He brought over a 15-year-old Hispanic child.
Oh my God.
I decided to add, they actually said like 15-year-old like Hispanic person. I was like, nope, child.
Child.
To his apartment to pose for some photos when he picked up a mallet and tried to hit the boy in the head. However, the kid fought back and eventually escaped.
Oh my God. I love when that happens.
I know. He went to the police and begged them, but when he went to the police, he begged them not to tell his foster parents that he was gay. So the police decided not to do anything about it.
Are you fucking kidding?
I know. There are several, this is now like what, the second of several times where it's like the police could have done something.
There's so many. Oh my nothing. God. Oh my God.
Yep. It just gets grosser.
Okay.
So on September 3rd, 1990, Dahmer picked up a man named Ernest Miller and took him home where they had sex. Dahmer continued to drug him, but then changed his game plan a little. So instead, by the usual MO of strangling Miller, he cut his throat instead.
Hmm.
He then sliced off the biceps of his victim and put them in the freezer. And then after taking all the flesh off the bone to discard of using acid, he decided to keep the entire skeleton.
Okay. All right.
It was around this time that Dahmer's neighbors began to complain about the putrid smell coming from the apartment. Dahmer explained to the landlord that his fridge was broken and that he would get it fixed as soon as possible.
And you know what else is in the fridge? It's just part of a human.
Yep. It's like, there's a big difference between when you're like, oh, I've got some like broccoli in the back that's like gone bad a few weeks ago versus like yogurt. The smell of death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so.
Dahmer's next victim was a man named David Thomas. Dahmer and Thomas were drinking in Dahmer's apartment when Dahmer drugged him. Dahmer claimed that he actually didn't want to kill him, but he was worried that he might be upset when he woke up and realized that he'd been drugged. So he thought the best thing to do was just to kill him anyways.
I mean, I just don't, like, why would I believe that when every other person you've drugged, you've immediately murdered?
Well, and especially because this time he filmed the whole dismemberment and took photos of Thomas's severed head in various positions around the apartment.
Are you...
To make matters worse, these photos were later had to be viewed by David Thomas's sister for identification purposes.
I can't with that. I hope no other person has ever had to, like, do you think they had to watch that in the trial?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, it's evidence. I mean, it's, God, it makes me think, I mean, it's a horrible, 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 horrible thing to have to do, but it just reminds me of John Walsh, who was the host of America's Most Wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And his son, Adam, was kidnapped and presumably murdered. And John had to listen to like hours and hours of tapes of children being murdered to see if he could identify
the
screams of his son.
Holy fuck. Did he find it?
I think the case is still unsolved.
I mean,
don't quote me on that, but
now that you say it, I remember that happening.
Okay, we're going to fast forward a little bit because, as I mentioned, I didn't really feel like going into each murder. But so some of Dahmer's subsequent victims were Curtis Strotter, who was killed on February 18th, 1991, Earl Lindsay on April 7th, 1991, Tony Hughes on May 24th, 1991, Matt Turner on June 30th, 1991, who Dahmer had met at Chicago Pride. Jeremiah Weinberger on July 4th, 1991, who Dahmer also met in Chicago. Oliver Tracy on July 12th, 1991. And Joseph Braidhoft on July 19th, 1991. So now we're kind of in like the berserker mode.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's like a week of time in between these victims.
Like he was...
Holy shit.
He was going
and everyone's...
Nuts.
And like no one is noticing.
No, besides the fact that his like apartment smells bad.
Holy fuck.
With these various victims, Dahmer would drug, strangle, rape, and preserve the body parts. Some sources claims that he ate some of the body parts. So we're going out to cannibalism.
Yep.
Others say merely he just preserved as trophies. But with Braidhoft, Dahmer actually slept with the body for a few days, like next to the body, until the head became infested with maggots.
I honestly want to leave. Why?
Why is this like the worst one?
This is, I had no idea it was this bad.
It's really bad. So during some of these murders, this is kind of when Dahmer got the idea. This is actually, I feel like, what he's most known for. he got the idea that he could actually turn his victims into zombies, completely submissive, eternally youthful sexual partners is what this person wrote, which it's kind of morbid. And attempted to do so by drilling holes into the skulls of his victims while they were still living and injecting hydrochloric acid or boiling water into the frontal lobe area of their brains with a large syringe to see if he could like subdue them.
He's so unwell.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Understatement of you. But it's just like, he is out of his fucking mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to get better, but first it has to get worse.
Does it have to?
It doesn't have to, but this is what happened.
Okay.
So this is the worst part. On May 27th, 1991, Dahmer met a 14-year-old boy named Conorak, who was actually, he met him at a local bus stop, who was actually the younger brother of the boy who had charged Dahmer with sexual assault.
Oh my God.
Although Dahmer didn't know that at the time. It's the boy, same last name as the one I couldn't pronounce earlier.
Oh.
Yeah, what are the actual odds? Dahmer invited him into his apartment, drugged him, raped him, and proceeded to drill a hole into his head where he then injected acid. Dahmer then left him by himself so he could go get a beer, and Conorak somehow woke up and was able to make it out of the building.
What?
And was discovered wandering around the street, naked, heavily under the influence of drugs, and bleeding from his rectum. Two young women from the neighborhood found him and called 911, but by the time police had arrived, so had Dahmer. He told the officers that Conorak was his 19-year-old boyfriend.
No.
And that they had had an argument while drinking.
No.
Against the protests of the two women who had called 911, who recognized him from the neighborhood and insisted that he was a child and couldn't speak English, the officers turned him back over to Dahmer.
No, there's no lie. I don't believe you.
It gets worse. Because the police actually went back to the apartment and apparently noticed that nothing was out of the ordinary. They later reported smelling a strange scent while inside the apartment, but decided not to investigate it.
What about the like body in the bed and the skeleton in the closet?
Well,
the literal skeleton.
The smell that they were smelling was the body of Tony Hughes, Dahmer's previous victim, who was decomposing in the bedroom.
There's no, I can't, this podcast is canceled. Like, do you know what a police officer is? Like, apparently. Did you look at all?
I mean, unfortunately, it's like, it's a situation where you have a white man saying that this boy who is not white is like in his care and that he's just drunk and that they had an argument and they're like, here's two gays who like, whatever, like just like let them go about their lives. And
no, that's one thing, but it's like, you're investigating an apartment. Mm-hmm. And you missed the fact that there's a dead body
in the next room.
In the room.
Yep. It's
okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Furthermore, the officers did not make any attempt to verify Conorak's age or identity, nor locate someone who could communicate with him, and failed to run a background check on Dahmer that would have revealed that he had been a convicted child molester still under probation.
Yeah.
So they left. And later that night, Dahmer killed and dismembered Conorak, keeping his skull as a souvenir.
I mean, I am so sorry. I'm so sorry.
The murders are over.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Come back to us, please. Please don't cancel your subscriptions. I apologize. So it's important to note that with each kill, as Dahmer is in this kind of berserker mode, he was losing more and more control. He seemed to care very little about covering his tracks and was becoming extremely, extremely sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
So, on July 22nd, 1991, Dahmer picked up 32-year-old Tracy Edwards and brought him back to his apartment. Dahmer claims he remembers very little at evening, but according to Edwards, Dahmer attempted to handcuff him and ultimately failed to cuff his wrist together. So that's what I was saying. It's kind of similar with the Ted Bundy incident.
Got it.
Wielding a large butcher knife, Dahmer forced Edwards into the bedroom where Edwards was exposed to a series of pictures that Dahmer had pasted on the wall of mangled body parts and noticed a terrible smell coming from a large blue barrel in the corner of the room.
Oh.
The barrel was filled with a potent acid, which was used to dissolve human bodies that were then disposed via the apartment toilet. Sorry.
Oh.
It's so bad.
Can you imagine like going into someone's apartment?
Worst grinder hookup ever.
Find. Oh,
Okay. Sorry.
But like modern day, Jeffrey Dahmer would be on Grindr 24/7.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just you wouldn't need to go trolling bars. Luckily, Edwards was able to overcome Dahmer, punched him in the face, kicked him in the stomach, and ran out the door.
Do more. Just keep kicking.
Yeah, seriously. Once on the street, he flagged down two police officers who were doing the nightly patrol and told them that he had been drinking with a man who had handcuffed him or tried to handcuff him and tried to kill him. The officers tried to remove the one handcuff that was on Edwards's wrist, but their keys would not fit. Like, why would their keys fit?
Yeah.
Is it like a one size fits all? Yeah. So they escorted Edwards back to Dahmer's apartment, where Dahmer answered the door, acknowledged that he was responsible for the handcuff, and pointed the officers into the direction of the bedroom where he said the keys would be. So obviously, this is like his luck really ran out because clearly he was like not in the right frame of mind during any of this.
No.
The fact that he was like, come on in, officers, let me show you to the bedroom.
Or he like wanted to get caught.
Maybe. I think he was really just like really drunk and sloppy and just like didn't really know what was going on. But luckily, he acted very friendly to the officers at first. However, Edwards recalls that remember that the knife that Dahmer had used to threaten him was in the bedroom. So the officers went into the bedroom where they found the photographs of the mangled bodies, and the officer called to his partner to arrest Dahmer. They eventually tackled and subdued him, or one officer subdued him while the other one opened the refrigerator to find a decomposing human head inside. Surprise.
Okay.
All right. So he's been arrested.
Yeah.
Phew. Upon searching the apartment, the freezer contained three more heads. There was a door inside the bedroom closet that led to a second room that had been outfitted with a deadbolt lock. Anne E. Schwartz, the reporter who was first on the scene, described what she saw in her book called The Man Who Could Not Kill Enough. She said, in the back of the closet, there was a metal stock pot that contained decomposed hands and a penis. On the shelf above the kettle were two skulls, along with some glass jars holding male genitalia preserved in formaldehyde.
Holy fuck.
Also Polaroid photos taken by Dahmer at various stages of the victim's deaths. One showed a man's head with the flesh still intact lying in a sink. Another displayed the victim cut open from the neck to the groin like a deer gutted after the kill. The cut so clean I could see the pelvic bone clearly.
Thanks, Anne.
Don't know why I was like, it gets better now. Some of the photos were also of the victims before he murdered them in various erotic and bondage poses. Furthermore, several corpses were stored in acid-filled vats, and implements for the construction of an altar of candles and human skulls were found in the closet.
Like, this is worse than any horror movie I could ever, like, dream of.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, like, yeah, it's beyond.
And he's just, like, living in an apartment. Mm-hmm. This is just what's in there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like, so, Dahmer was indicted on 17 charges of murder, which was later reduced to 15, unclear why, and for some reason he was not charged in the attempted murder of Tracy Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Which fucking sucks, because, like, I get it that, like, if you're charged for, like, 17 murders, or, like, if it's reduced to 15, like, you're probably still going to get arrested. Like, you're going to go to, prison forever, but it's, like,
Those people still died.
I know.
Yeah.
It sucks. With the evidence overwhelmingly against him, Dahmer pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. His trial began on January 30th, 1992, and lasted only 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The court found Dahmer to be sane and guilty on count of all 15 counts of murder and sentenced him to 15 life terms, totaling 957 years in prison, which was the maximum penalty available, as Wisconsin had abolished capital punishment in 1853.
Bye.
At his sentencing hearing, Dahmer expressed remorse for his actions, where he said, "Your Honor, it is now over. This has never been a case of trying to get free. I didn't want freedom. Frankly, I wanted death for myself. This was a case to tell the world that I did what I did, but not for reasons of hate. I hated no one. I knew I was sick or evil or both. Now I believe I was sick. The doctors told me about my sickness, and now I have some peace. I know how much harm I have caused. Thank God there will be no more harm that I can do. I believe that only the Lord Jesus Christ can save me from my sins. I ask for no consideration." In May of that year, Dahmer was extradited back to Ohio, where he entered a plea of guilty for the murder of his first victim, Stephen Hicks. Dahmer served his time at the Columbia Correctional Institution in Portage, Wisconsin, where he ultimately eventually declared himself a born-again Christian.
Sure he did.
Like, why the fuck
not? Why not?
He was attacked twice in prison, the first time in July 1994, when an inmate attempted to slash his throat with a razor blade while Dahmer was returning to his cell from a church service.
Mm.
Dahmer escaped the incident with superficial wounds. However, he was not so lucky in the second time. While doing janitorial work in the prison gym, Dahmer and another inmate, Jesse Anderson, were severely beaten by fellow inmate Christopher Scarver with a broomstick handle on November 28th, 1994. Dahmer died of severe head trauma while on his way to the hospital. Anderson died 2 days later from his wounds.
Well,
like, goodbye and good riddance.
Yeah.
Upon learning of his death, Dahmer's mother, Joyce, responded angrily to the media saying, "Now is everyone happy? Now that he's bludgeoned to death, is that good enough for everyone?"
I mean,
like, yeah,
I guess. Could be bad. Like, could be better.
Yeah, maybe he, like, if he hadn't, yeah. Or maybe if he'd been, like, killed, like, before he killed all those people. The response of the families of Dahmer's victims was mixed, although it appears that most were pleased with his death. In 1994, Lionel Dahmer published a book, A Father's Story, and donated a portion of the proceeds from his book to the victims' families. Most of the families showed support for Lionel Dahmer and his second wife, Sherry. Both continued to carry the name Dahmer and say that they love Jeffrey despite his crimes. Dahmer's mother, Joyce, died of cancer in 2000, and Jeffrey's younger brother, David, changed his name and now lives in anonymity.
I mean, go for it.
Yeah. Oh, what the fuck? I totally forgot that this is the little addendum that it relates back to Adam Walsh. In January 2007, evidence surfaced potentially linking Dahmer to Adam Walsh's 1981 and murder in Florida. However, Adam's father, John Walsh, believed that it was another serial killer, Otis Toole, who committed the crime. When interviewed about Adam Walsh in the early 1990s, Dahmer repeatedly denied involvement in the crime. In 2008, Florida declared the Walsh case closed, naming Toole, who died in prison in 1996, as the killer.
Oh.
So I lied about it being never solved. But
I mean, I'm not, like, super satisfied about that.
No. But I don't really know that much about that case, but
wow. Thank you so much.
Like, you're welcome. I feel like I've traumatized you.
That was hard to get through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not really a silver lining.
Except no.
That he's dead and
he's dead
doing that.
And he was able to, you know, he was sentenced for his crimes, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess there's something to be said for him having remorse and what he said about
for sure.
His crimes. I mean, it's much harder when people are just like deny that they did anything, or were like, "I loved killing."
Oh my God. I mean, or they're like, or even just like denying that they even did it to begin with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, luckily, yes, he did take full responsibility for his crimes. I mean, I don't know how much solace that can bring the victims' families. Although I will say also, so families of the 11 of his victims eventually sued Dahmer's estate for damages, and a lawyer who represented 8 of the families had planned to auction off Dahmer's estate to raise up to $1 million to give back to the families, which sparked a lot of controversy. So a group called Milwaukee Civic Pride was established, and as an effort to raise funds separately for the families so they could actually just purchase and destroy Dahmer's possessions. And they ended up raising over $400,000.
Wow.
So then the families, or the majority of the families, agreed to that price. And so Dahmer's possessions, instead of being sold, were destroyed and buried in an undisclosed location. Which actually I think is like, is good, because, you know, there'd be some sick fucks out there who would like want to buy his couch and like would want to be like, "Look, this is the bookshelf that," and like, instead of being like, "Nope, we need to just like wipe this piece of shit off the face of the earth," and like still get money to the victim's families, but not having like, that shit still like out there.
No, I have absolutely no interest in visiting that home. I'm very glad it no longer exists. Okay. Well, cool. As usual, it's difficult to transition into our final segment, which
it's easier sometimes than others.
It's our petty bullshit. Yeah, I think this is just a way of like ending on a lighthearted note when we do things like that. And I know that we complain about really stupid shit, but we also, you know, it's all for fun.
It is. I have a very trivial.
Mine is very trivial as
thank
well.
God. Good. Actually, no, it's good. It's a way of like, boosting morale after we just like flushed it down the toilet. along with all the like body parts.
Just okay. Just like bitching about other people. Yeah. So my complaint today is when you go to a restaurant and your waiter or waitress will not write down your order. Okay.
Yep.
I don't think there has been a time where I was at a restaurant with more than two people where my waiter didn't write down my order and actually got the order completely right.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that there are some places that are trying to be fancy, and I'm sure it's not the choice of the waiter or waitress to be trying to memorize your order. That's like supposed to be, I don't even know why that's a thing. I'm not impressed that you're trying to memorize what I'm saying.
I don't know.
But like, even in situations that I've, like, if you're there with like one other person and you order like two things, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many times when I've been out to dinner with my whole family and you're watching the person like trying to memorize every single order and people's like specific requests and like how they want their meat done and like what side they want. And I'm like, I can see how hard your brain is working and I fucking know you're not getting all of this. Just fucking write it down. I don't care.
Well, and especially when then they leave and they come back and they're like, so you wanted the swordfish? And you're like, I wanted like a burger.
Yeah, like not even close. Yeah, absolutely. So that's my trivial shit today. I'm Perfect. Glad you can relate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wonder if it's at certain places it's like policy to not write it down.
No, I think it definitely is. Okay. Like if it's like a high-end restaurant, they're like, oh, it's tacky for you to like pull it out. You should be able to just remember. But I don't get
that. Well, so half the time you know that they're like, oh, can I have like the salmon? But like instead of honey mustard sauce, can I have balsamic? And I want a salad with like... You know.
Yeah, exactly. No, honey, it's just pen and paper. It's fine.
Yeah, never hurt. Never hurt nobody. My complaint, super trivial, is I can't fucking stand promposals.
Oh yes.
I think they're tacky.
I'm with you.
I think they're gross. I think they're nauseating.
Mm-hmm.
And just stupid. Like what the fuck?
You're fucking like 17 years old.
And they're always like, so, like, it's like someone has like, I can't even like think of like a good one, but like, would they be like, like they give someone like a big thing of like popcorn. They'll be like, hate to be corny, but will you go to like.
And they all like try to outdo each other because now they just keep like getting bigger and bigger where they like have to like spray paint. Will you go to prom with me on like top of the school building and then like fly a helicopter over it?
Well, and it's especially stupid when if like you're dating someone in high school, like obviously you're going to go to prom with that person.
Right.
It's also, I mean, it also falls. A lot of this falls into some like heteronormative bullshit where it's like traditional roles of like the man like wooing the woman and like blah, 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 blah.
No, it's gross.
And I've seen a lot that are also like fucking racist.
Oh yeah. That's like a big thing that happens all the time.
And I think it's stupid. I think it's some breeder nonsense. And I think that, I mean, granted it was different cause like I was gay and single. So I just was like to like one of my girlfriends, it's like, do you want to go to prom? Like prom. And it was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I went with one of my gay best friends and he...
You have another gay best friend?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
You asked me someone who I hate for no reason? Him, whoever that is.
He did like make me a sign, but we were in Italian class together and he just like wrote it in Italian and came to my a cappella rehearsal to ask me.
That's cute.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, I guess. I just, I mean, it's also like really doesn't affect my life whatsoever. What?
No, it's so stupid. 18
year olds are doing.
Well,
but
it's
I think
also
it's
just
stupid.
Like, can't wait for you guys to break up 2 weeks into college. Mm-hmm. Like you're the true love of your life, I'm sure.
Yeah. Super dumb.
Yeah. Also, our prom at my private school was called Last Hurrah.
Nice.
I think we also had to take swing dancing lessons for a month before the prom. So, I'm sorry, before the last hurrah, so we could participate in a swing dancing competition.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in.
Rate, review, and subscribe.
Hope you made it to the end. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at RWF Podcast. Send us your ghost stories and et cetera to rwfpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to pledge $5 a month for some bonus content, you can check that out at our Patreon. In our Instagram bio, patreon.com/rwfpodcast.
PATREON.
Mm-hmm. And go take a nice shower after listening to an episode.
Get yourself a cupcake. Like just like, treat yourself.
Watch an episode of The Office. Like
that's right.
Treat yourself.
Yes, baby. Bye, bitches.